Today, a week in the day with Edwin Almeida. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today I'm joined again by property insider Edwin Almeida. And Edwin, you've had a busy week.
Yes, I have, Martin. But first and foremost, I've got my shirt.
Oh, very nice.
Control-Alt-Delete, Martin. Control-Alt-Delete, chicos, locos. Yeah, it's all happening now.
Yeah, and just for people who may not be up to speed with that, that was one of my quotes from last year when I said that we're going to have a reset and Alt-Control-Delete of the property sector eventually. It's just going to take some time, so...
Yeah, well, now you can get it on T-shirt. We'll give them a link for the viewers to make orders, Martin, and we can get the word out there.
Okay, right. So the first bit of merch. Very good. But you better explain Chico Loco because people might not know.
I guess Chicos Locos is my expression of when I reach out to my followers. It's a crazy world. It's a crazy time to live in, and Chicos represents like people, slang term to people.
Right, so people. it's crazy times, people. Right,
that's what you're basically saying. We're all a little bit crazy in our own different ways. some more crazier than others. You know, tequila more than others.
Yeah, it looks to me as though the craziness is upping antes. Now, you were telling me that one of your conversations with a councillor, basically, they know, don't they? They know what's coming.
Yeah, well, look, I had an interesting coffee with a senior council member from one of the major councils in Sydney. It was actually one of your followers, Martin, that reached out to me, and I was able to have a chat with her. It was rather interesting because... she was looking at getting some finance, and one of the people that I deal with on a regular basis as well is working with her, and then they said, oh yeah, look, and when you need to look for property or whatever, like just we'll get Edwin, and then she said, well, Edwin Almeida, I know that guy. he appears on Martin's show. So it's a small world, chicos locos. It's a small world. The interesting thing, Martin, was that what I was informed over the weekend was that a lot of the legal eagles from the councils and the major councils are actually leaving leaving the kitchen because it is getting hot in there. There's a lot of litigation about to hit a lot of councils. A lot of paperwork is all over the place. Developers, builders, developers, and councils don't know where projects got inspected or not. What's happened to the paperwork? There's a lot of things lost in the construction process, and quite frankly, there's going to be a lot of developments that are going to be stalled. Even though they're completed, because they can't find paperwork, or they don't have, not so much the paperwork, but the inspection reports, the mandated inspection reports that are required in order to provide the occupation certificate. So it is a mess. So on that note, good friends out there, the proverbial is going to hit the fan, because that kitchen is getting very, very hot.
Yeah, and of course we had over the last week a fire, in Canberra was reported, and they really showed just how significant the flammable cladding issue was. So effectively, there was a very significant event in Canberra a few days ago, and then of course down in Melbourne, there was another apartment block that was evacuated because of poor quality finishes, because of mould, because of flammable cladding. I mean, it goes on and on, doesn't it?
It does. And the alarming thing, Martin, is the fact that the fire in the apartment block in Canberra was ignited by a smouldering cigarette. the only thing that saved that apartment block was because in the paneling there was probably a gap in between the panels for aesthetic purposes. One wasn't joined onto the other one or butted up to the next panel, because if they were, I'm telling you, that whole facade, that whole frontage there would have gone, that whole building would have gone up in smoke. And the fire that was coming out of there from the video that I posted on Twitter and on my Facebook page, the intensity, you've got to look at it. If the viewers haven't seen it, you've got to look at it. You've got to look for it Just Think One on my Twitter page and also on the on my Facebook page. It is intense, Martin. It was really intense for this thing. And so, look, but for the viewers, I know there's a building in the city where when it's going to rain or there's a bit of a storm, the residents are not allowed to go anywhere near their windows. At the moment, there's a rectification order in place for this particular building, where each property owner in that building had to come up with $100,000. So we talk about mascot towers of the $70,000, $130,000 that they've had to come up with. We've got this building, and it's all hush hush. It's in the city. I'm just waiting for the to obtain a strata report, and you can't go near the windows because is a lightning strike going to ignite the whole bloody thing? You know, what's going to happen? How we don't know how this. What we do know, that it only takes a smoldering cigarette to light these babies up. So, you know, moving forward, it's going to be an interesting event. And I'd say to the regulators, to the people in charge, to whoever's wanting to do something, put something in place, whatever, you better do it quick, you better do it soon, because these things are so volatile. And by all means, go to my Facebook page or Twitter page and you will see how intense that fire is.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and of course it mirrors the accident in the UK some time ago. And that's the point about the flammable cladding, isn't it? It is just really, really flammable. I mean, once it gets a flame against it, there's nothing can stop it, unless, as you say, there's an air gap, or if it's designed properly. But unfortunately, in some cases, the cladding was perhaps not installed correctly either. So this is a big issue. And of course, just to be clear, the number of buildings that are exposed is unknown, and a number of states are not disclosing which buildings are potentially affected. But we know that in Victoria, for example, it's something like 600 buildings or something from the 1,300 they looked at, right? It's a huge, huge issue.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. I've seen buildings that are totally wrapped in aluminium cladding, and also they're council buildings or state buildings, you know, hospitals and the like that have got it, and they're all being rectified, or not all, but they're starting to rectify these on in a hush hush basis. There's one in Newcastle. Bob the builder was telling me that they had a lot of rectification work going back, going back a few months, and it was all kept under wraps because they don't want to let the public know. I mean, for obvious reasons, but then again, you sort of think when you've got 100, when you've got 120, 150, 200, 250 families, individual families living in these towers, you gotta hope and pray that that everything else is in order as well, in order to evacuate the buildings, in order to make sure that they're able to contain the fire at a certain level, that the sprinkler systems work. But it's a mess. So that's another thing that I've been involved with this week, Martin. It's a crazy world out there.
It is, and it's just worth noting that over the weekend the auction clearance rates were quoted, I say quoted, as being very high, although if you look at the absolute volumes, they were still relatively low compared with last year. But what's quite interesting is that people are still able to flog those recent high-rise developments to somebody else, so there's a greater fool.
There is, unfortunately. Unfortunately, there is. But we just seem to be going around and around in circles with a lot of these things, because then later on they want to bail out from the state governments or the, you know, whoever they can get a hold of. And I say again, I hope to God that the agents that sold these individuals the properties, that they disclose the material fact. I mean, 9 out of 10 times they probably don't. And yeah, it's all caveat emptor, you know, buyer beware. But you know, at the end of the day, we're still working on the regulations and legislation that that deems for us to disclose material fact, particularly when it's not even noted in the contract of sale. I mean, the list goes on as to all the many ways. As I said, as I've been saying for years, and talking to my colleagues and a lot of people that have asked me to buy, you know, if it's a great idea to buy in the Homebush Bay precinct or in that whole area, and there are a lot of other areas around Sydney as well, where, you know, contamination reports have disappeared in the last over the last two decades, where, you know, where we knew what was there. I mean, growing up in some of these places, you know, I've said Homebush Bay was where, if you want to have a look and get an idea as to the Olympic precinct, what it looked like before all this construction happened on there, you know, do yourself a favour and go and get, pull out the old video of Beyond Thunderdome, and that's what it was, the brick pits, the abattoirs and every other industry that just dumped all the toxin substances in their backyards.
Yeah, indeed. Now, the last thing to touch on today is quite interesting development in terms of the real estate industry itself, and it's all around this thing called purple bricks. So let's just go over the history a little bit and then talk about what appears to be happening.
Oh, well, purple bricks, didn't they get themselves in a lot of trouble? And as I said, okay, it was a few months off. You know, 3-4 months. What's a few months between my friends Purple Bricks and myself? We're not predicted that they'll be kicked out of Australia, but they're not going to go that easily, because they've got a lot of compensation to be paid out to their agents that work for them, and they've also got a lot of compensation to be paid out to vendors that took on their business model. They're going to go bon voyage, adios, see you later. And I believe they're probably on word around the traps, you know, the full exit will be around November sometime this year. I'm going to go to the airport, and I'm going to have my bon voyage banners and everything, and wish them farewell, and you know, give them a good swift kick up the backside for not listening to me when I spoke to the senior management when they were about to launch. I told them that the compliance was up the creek. I told them that the people that they got involved were not going to manage this multi-million dollar business. They sunk close to $30, $40 million in marketing, and what did he get them? Not much, other than the bad rap. And you know, and then it snowballed to America, and they'll soon be exiting Canada as well. They'll go back from being a $500 million business or company to, you know, to being worth next to nothing very soon, because they've also got a lot of issues in England.
Mm. So it's worth saying, I think, Edwin, that you know the theoretical model that they were trying to execute probably has some merit, but it was the execution, specifically here in Australia, that was the problem, right? So, you know, there's a difference between concept and execution. Unfortunately, it was execution, wasn't it?
Definitely. The model, I thought, look, I gave the model a huge rap, because when you looked at the model, it really challenged the traditional model that will be changing, that will be, and I say again, you heard it first here on DFA with the two biggest chicos locos, Martin, you know, Obi-Wan and myself. And you've heard it first. It's got to change. This model, the old traditional commission-based model, has to change, because people are not getting the full bang for their buck. when you're talking about the average sales of a property, and I've been talking about this again for about 4 or 5 years, and I put out the first report, it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I think, when I wrote an article analyzing how long it takes an agent or an agency to sell a property, and particularly in the good times. In the good times, it takes about 12 hours from start to finish. In the not so good, where things scale down a little bit, it takes about 17 to 21 hours. Of course, these are averages. But when you break it all down, I came down to something like $1,200 per hour to $1,436 per hour. Their agents are again. So when Purple Bricks came in, and they were offering a fixed price model, which was, let's say, rounded off to $8,000. In retrospect, and there were some good agents. Let me say there were some good agents and picked up some great listings in the eastern, particularly around the eastern suburbs and the North Shore, where they were selling $3-5 million properties for $8,000. And you compare that to, let's say, let's not call it a 2% commission, but let's call it even a 1% commission that a lot of them would have cut the fees down to in order to get those listings. You're talking about $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in commissions when you include the commissions plus the vendor-paid advertising that a lot of agents and agencies also take from the vendors. So it is a huge saving. So, yes, the model was fantastic. I was all right. As a matter of fact, Martin, I spoke to the owners of Purple Bricks, as you know, and I spoke to the management that came over, the Andrew Bass. We had several meetings. I was going to, wanted to run it, but one thing led to another, and it didn't go off. Thank God, it didn't happen, because I wasn't happy with a few things. I wasn't happy with a few things either. But then again, we parted ways. But I was in the background talking to management and trying to help them out in order to look after my colleagues, in order to look after the people. And I said, you need to increase the fee structure. They didn't. Then when they went to WA, I said, that is the litmus test. That is where you're going to be tested, because over there properties are taking 90 to 150 days and even longer to sell. So let's see how the agents are going to make money. So to cut a long story short, that was a litmus test. And I said, unless you increase the fees, you're going to go nowhere. And then it all went to the proverbial poo-poo. And it all come unstuck. Now we have Better Way Real Estate, which I call Purple Bricks 2.0. The same management company, the same management, part of the same management that launched Purple Bricks in New South Wales in Australia have now come up with Better Way Real Estate. And again, I've spoken to the people that have joined them. I've spoken to their agents, and it's, show me something different. The only thing different is that the agents are going to be running on what we call a credit debit system, which is basically my term of calling an advancement commission, but at least it's compliant to parts of the legislation. But there's a lot of compliance that they've still got to get and put together, which is the biggest problem that Purple Bricks Mark One had was compliance in relation to supervision of what their agents were doing. Now, they reckon they've resolved this. I don't believe they have, based on what I've been told. And this is just based on what I've been told. Now, it's all on prima facie, on face value. But Martin, from what I've been told, from the lengthy discussions that I've had with his agents, and also knowing the individuals, how they operate, my God, it's really just Purple Bricks 2.0 or 2.0.
Okay, so deja vu all over again. But I understand they're going to be launching in regional New South Wales first. Is that right?
That's correct. And which begs the question. I've always felt that regional New South Wales, or the offices in regional New South Wales, they're more akin to for people to do business with the local agents, or with Johnny on the spot, or Johnny that's grown up in the area that the locals have seen, you know, go through primary school, kindergarten, primary school, high school, and then they became real estate agents, or they went off and did something else, and then they became real estate agents, or sold them the used car, and then they became real estate agents. Shit happens, man. Come on, it's a fluid world. Yeah, we move from one industry to another. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. So. And so they're very relationship based. They're very so unless they pick some of the top notch agents in those regions, in those areas of where they're launching, the ones that are very close to the community, that are community centered, and the families, they've got a long history there. Unless they make the transition into the Purple Bricks 2.0, well, guess what? I really think that any newcomer is going to struggle, and they will struggle for a very, very long time. And then you've got a question as to how much of their time, because when you're struggling, you're not really servicing your client. You're trying to stay alive. You're trying to, trying to fend for yourself. You're trying to do something. And so, and that's what happened with Purple Bricks, Mark One. So they're the questions that are going to arise. But then I'm putting a little bit of more thought to it, that you've got the fact that they're offering, an advance commission or a credit debit system, which means they're on the books. They're officially employed by the company. So if they're officially employed, so they're going to get a wage, they're going to get a monthly salary, and obviously they've got to then pay for the super and pay for everything else. So it's like a normal employment agreement. But it's a performance-based package. Some of the guys have told me what they've got to do in order to maintain that package, in order to maintain their position. And given the fact that we're in a peculiar, I'll call it peculiar, because it's not so much turbulent, it's more of a peculiar. It's an unprecedented time of event where things have just we're getting left field scenarios coming in at play on this economic landscape. We've seen, and I've seen from, in some of these regions, sales listings drop by up to 35% from, say, even 6 months ago, Martin. And so, which means, I'll give you an idea. Approximately 3.5 years ago, we had a meeting with Fair Trade in New South Wales with regard to the training and the new training regime that was about to roll out. You and I did a couple of videos about that with regards to the REA New South Wales and what they were doing in order to manipulate and control all that side of things. So at that time, now these are figures from Fair Trade in New South Wales. In this meeting, it was brought out that there was approximately 53,000 real estate agents in New South Wales, which included selling agents, property managers, and corporation licenses. So licenses and certificates, there were about 53,000, of which 27,000 or so are predominantly selling agents or agents involved in the sales process. So then you've got in New South Wales, you've got 27,000 individual real estate agents, and then you've got and the majority of these are obviously in Sydney, between Sydney, Newcastle and Wollongong. That's the majority of the agents, the selling agents. Now, in the Sydney region, excluding properties under offer, at the moment I'm tracking something like 16,500 properties that are for sale. When you look at the numbers, so from my discussions with colleagues, and then you've got figures in terms of sales in New South Wales that we're running at about 1,150 or thereabouts on average per week, sales per week, and you've got 27,000 selling agents. do the math. There are a lot of agencies that at the moment are starving a lot, and I know that there are some of our followers have tweeted out to me and they've said, I've just seen this agency close, I've just seen that agency close, I've just seen three in Newcastle close, two in Penrith closing, blah blah blah, and all this, and there are all these closures of agencies, the ones that don't have rent rolls, but even the ones that do have rent rolls that I know, Martin, are struggling. Some of them are on the second credit card or on the third credit card. They can't draw down from the principal place of residence anymore in order to fund the agency, to keep the agency going, because you've got to pay staff, you've got to pay receptionists, you've got to pay the rental on the business, you've got to pay the leases on the Mercedes, and if you're in the eastern suburbs, on your Porsches. Whereas for us out in the western suburbs, hey, we've only got our Toyotas, but hey, we get by. Yeah, you've got all these expenses. So now going back to what I was alluding to at the beginning, where the performance of the agencies that have got to join this new group, they've got to sell, they've got to list and sell 4 properties a month from what they've told me. Now, I'm taking it at face value that is that, because it's not just one or two that have told me this. It's a number of these agents that have told me this. So for a lot of agents in Sydney are struggling to sell one a month, Martin. It's a struggle to sell one a month. And in some cases, they've cut the commissions down in Sydney to 0.5% as long as the vendors pay $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 or $10,000 advance in vendor pay. That is what's keeping the agencies alive, and that's another story. Because that's another one of my sacred cows that I need. I believe that the New South Wales government need to seriously look at and need to seriously squash or make sure that the agents that take vendor paid advertising upfront, that money goes into the trust account, because 80% of that, 70 to 80% of that money goes to fund the lifestyles and the business of the agency, and the other 30% is used for the purpose that it was given for, which is advertising and marketing the property that they're meant to be selling. So that's what's going to happen, Mark. It is painful out there. So I don't know how the agents are going to survive, and is it going to be another one of those things where they take on listings, they can't service them, and then they forget about them, and then are they going to do what Purple Bricks Mark One did, hold an internal competition, let's see who can crunch the vendors down a lot lower in prices, we can sell the properties, and they got given prizes. My God, insanity, call our audience Chicos Locos, but these guys are crazy bastards, they're really out there.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, Edwin. And, given the backcloth of the lack of supply of new property coming on, the momentum that may or may not be in the market, I'm still quite sceptical of what people are saying to me in terms of what I'm seeing in terms of my data. But let's see what the credit data at the end of the month tells us in terms of forward momentum. But it's an interesting time to launch another version of Purple Bricks under a different name, isn't it?
It is. They've raised $4 million into a local company. Mm. Yeah, they say they've got the support of the regional television, television group. They've got the support of high rollers. And that's something else. This is the Purple Bricks 2.0, as I call it. Purple Bricks 2.0 is an amalgamation or a coming together of eMove, which is a real estate agency in the UK that went belly up not too long ago, 6 months ago or some, six, eight, 8 months ago, they went belly up. And the part of the original management in Purple Bricks Mark One Australia, they've come together. So do two negatives make a positive in this case? Can we say that two wrongs make a right, that two defunct businesses or model or what would you call it, management styles coming together? Because at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. It's management. The idea, the concept, as I said, was brilliant for the consumer because it cut the price of a commission from $60,000, $70,000 to a fixed price. Great, awesome. But it's the whole execution, the whole running of it. It has some legs. It has some legs, but unfortunately, most of those legs are either broken, are either bruised, are either sprained. You know, what usually happens when I go and spar with these young bastards at the gym, you know, that they, you know, I go in there with all enthusiasm. I'm going to, you know, hit him, give him an uppercut. I'm pretending I'm already boxing and fighting with Uppercut Adams at the end of the year, and he better be training. And I go in there with all this enthusiasm, but I come out the worst, and that's what we've got here. So it's going to be very, very interesting, Martin, to see what ends up happening there.
Yeah, well, we'll watch it as it goes forward, of course, Edwin, because it's part of the overall landscape. Look, I appreciate your time today, and good to catch up on what's happened over the last week. A lot happening. We should do this again quite soon, because at the moment, you know, every week is a new week, isn't it?
Oh, look, definitely. Happy to chew the cud with you on these things, Martin, and what happens in your space of the world, in the economic sector, in the greater picture. I mean, my industry has a big role to play in that, given the fact that we're, it's 53,000 real estate agents and 8,500 corporations, which means 8,500 offices. So you know it doesn't take Einstein to figure out that losing 20%, 30%, 40% of the people in the industry, or even the corporations, 20% of offices, that is a huge backlash on the local economies that they're operating under. And a lot of offices are in, in hubs, in centres where they provide a lot of services, or they provide a lot of other type of economic benefit to the cafes next door and the leases on the cars and so forth. It is huge. I'm still sticking to my prediction that we're going to have a fallout of about 30%, 30 to 40% of agents and agencies that are going to be that are going to just they just but they've got no choice but to move on and get another job, because it's just not happening out there. There's just things that it's a changing world, and that's only until REA and Domain, Martin, mark my words, REA and Domain are going to come up with their own Purple Bricks Mark III model, where they're going to use us as go between, and they're going to be handling most of the transaction, and all we're going to be doing is working on a fee for service.
Yeah, as you say, games people play, particularly in a time of uncertainty. So we'll watch that very closely. Edwin, thanks for your time today.
And thank you, Martin. And as I say, control, alt, delete, chicos, locos, hold my tequila and make yourself a bowl of popcorn and just watch it all happen, in a warm, cozy room.
And we'll put the links below if people want to follow up on that. Thanks, Edwin. See you soon.
Cheers, Martin.
Cheers. So there you have it, the latest and greatest from Edwin Almeida. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.